You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, it's Lurk. Thanks for checking out the Van Flip podcast. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to give us a rating and review and share us with your friends. You can follow the show on Twitter at Van Flip Podcast. Go ahead and shoot us a tweet right now. For all things hardcore and metal music and everything in between, check out lambgoat.com. Subscribe to Lambgoat's YouTube page and you can watch all these episodes on video, get breaking news and obscure metal content. And make sure you stay up to date by following Lambgoat and our guests on social media. I put all the links together in the show notes. Support the podcast at patreon.com/thevanflip. This month, we're giving away a brand new copy of the new Deftones album, Ohms, to one of our lucky Patreon supporters, so make sure you're signed up. Shout out to our current Patreon supporters, Dylan, Lachlan, and Alec. Thanks for the love, guys. We appreciate it. And on this episode of the podcast, we are lucky enough to have Willie Adler, guitar player for Lamb of God.
Oh, yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh, yeah, this is stuff. Oh no. Oh, no. Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
Now here we are, Van Flip Podcast. This is probably going to be our biggest to date podcast that we've had, at least biggest guest, definitely biggest band we've had on. I'd like to welcome Willie Adler, guitar player for Lamb of God. That is awesome. Thanks for taking the time out of the day to kind of chat with us for today.
Yeah, no worries, man. Thank you guys for having me. And sorry it was a bit of a hassle trying to catch up, but I appreciate you guys hanging in there.
No worries. Yeah, well worth it. Well worth the wait. So like I said earlier before we got on the podcast, Alex has a plethora of stuff to ask you guys. I'm going to kind of recede to the background on this episode, interjecting here or there and waiting my time for the end of the episode to, you know, talk about anything that he may not have talked about. But, I mean, we're basically going to talk a lot about the coffee, the Lamb of God coffee that just came out first. I'm sure we're going to knock that out because that's something that just happened. You have a couple of live streams coming up, too, we'll touch on. But then, you know, we'll get into the band. So I'll just kind of hand things over to Alex. Go ahead, Al.
All right. Well, I guess I should ask. I'm not sure if you saw my tweet, but why the hell didn't you call the coffee laid to roast?
That's really good, man. No, I did not see your tweet. I'm not on Twitter, but
yeah, that makes sense.
that definitely gives me something to think about in the future.
Lamb of God retweeted it like, you know, a week after I posted it, so I wasn't. Somebody in the camp saw it, which I'm grateful for, but yeah, I was a little bummed because I, you know, thought of that in my brilliant brain, and but I just wanted to harass you about it.
Yeah, I think the followers also had a bunch of other names that they thought of too.
There were a bunch of other clever ones that unfortunately I can't recall. But
who gives a cup? That's one.
Oh man,
that was one that stuck out to me. But anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, the next brew you do or something down the road,
maybe like,
maybe get on Twitter and check stuff out because there's lots of good stuff on there.
Into this whole world, so we're you know, I'm sure there's going to be plenty more opportunities to name some.
Yeah, no doubt. So I saw that, you know, the coffee's in conjunction with Paul from Between the Buried and Me, or he handles the roasting, I guess. Is that accurate? All right. How'd you hook up with Paul? Did you guys know that you were both passionate about coffee, or?
My history with Paul goes back a long way. So the band has had a relationship with Paul for a long time, and Paul has served as kind of an honorary touring member of Lamb of God in the past. Where Mark has had some emergencies at home and couldn't get out. Paul has filled in for us and helped out. So there were, a series of tours that we did, and one in particular that was fairly global. Like the tour ended in South Africa, but we had hit Indonesia and all these other, wild, off the map places. And, Paul and I had kind of made it a point on that tour to suss out all the local coffee spots and kind of, you know, see who was doing what. And we would pick up coffee here and there and, you know, take it back to home and see what we liked and all that. And I think on that tour, we kind of like came up, we were like, yo, we could do this. Like we could roast coffee. Like how fucking hard can it be? Like we can definitely do this. Like, you know, and so at the end of it, we were like, bet, let's go home. Let's do this. And, so I went one direction and Paul completely went another direction. I ended up on eBay, like buying a bunch of old ass, like popcorn machines that I was like, these like roast the perfect amount of coffee. Like I can have like six of them running at a time and I'll make sure that none of them catch on fire and roasting like small amounts of coffee, like 5 ounces in each one. But it was ridiculous. It was completely ridiculous. I'm on my back deck. My wife is fucking losing her mind. Like I'm going to burn the fucking house down. And, of course, you know, I'm showing Paul and Paul's like, well, I bought this actually designated coffee roaster machine that does a proper. So he always went up me and that just kind of went on for years until finally Paul was like, yo, I'm doing it. I'm getting into the game for real. I'm going to open up my own spot down here in Charlotte. And he went through a few different names and finally settled on Night Flyer. And so when the idea came up that we were going to kind of dip our foot into the coffee world, it really, I was just like, yo, I was like, we gotta, you know, it's a no brainer. Let's do this with Paul and let's, you know, make it legit. Let's make it a real coffee. Let's not offer some burnt to shit bullshit that people are going to, you know, flip out about because it's way too much caffeine and doesn't serve anything but to keep you awake.
That makes sense. How long have you been into coffee, you know, for lack of a better expression?
Probably about almost 7 years now. Okay. I've been like diving down the rabbit hole deeper and deeper and deeper. The first years I was really like, I need to find the best, you know, coffee in the world kind of deal.
Which, pardon my ignorance, but I guess I was reading a little bit about it, and your coffee comes from El Salvador, or at least this coffee. Why there versus Colombia, or I guess the Arabica variety? I don't know a whole lot about coffee.
It's all Arabica variety. So the deal with coffee is Central America, South America, a lot of those regions produce, you know, and we could have gone with Colombian or something like that, but this particular farm Paul had history with, working with, and knew that it was reliably sourced. And so that region of the world produces a very well-balanced kind of middle-of-the-road coffee that has a lot of citrus notes and floral notes. And when you roast it to a certain degree, like we did with this coffee, like to a medium type of roast, you bring out some caramel and brown sugar and shit like that. So it's our whole goal with this was to put out a coffee that behaved well no matter how you make your coffee, like whether you have a Mr. Coffee drip machine, an espresso machine, you know, a pour over rig, a French press, whatever you do. We wanted this coffee to perform well across the board for anybody, universally, just kind of, you know, be a really good coffee. So we wanted the source from that region because that coffee is very bright and it will perform well with a medium roast, you know, as opposed to like, say, East Africa, to where you kind of roast that on the darker end to bring out like chocolate and, you know, much more deeper, you know, earthier kind of vibes to it, which we may get into. We may dive into some other roasts, but we figured our first foray into this, let's keep it, you know, to where it's accessible to everybody. And like our deal and what Paul really strives to do is to make sure that the coffee gets in the hands of the consumer within a reasonable amount of time from roasting. Like I was telling this to somebody else, like you could, you know, raw beans, you could spend upwards of, you know, $15-$16 a pound on raw beans, or, you know, you could spend like $3. And you take those $3 beans, you roast them, and you get them to somebody within 2 weeks, Or you take those $15 beans and you roast them and you get it to somebody in 3 months, they're going to go for those fucking $3 beans all day. It's all about the process with coffee is all about that window between roast and when it gets to the consumer. So we really wanted to kind of focus on that as well.
Wow. Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm
love sorry, coffee. Man. I know this. No, fucking, you can talk about coffee. I'll fucking lose my mind on this shit.
No, I can appreciate the depth of your knowledge. I just don't have it. I mean, I love coffee, but I'm not, I'm not a connoisseur or a snob. It's kind of like I love beer, but I drink Miller Lite, you know? I have no standards.
Takes up your time, so don't even fucking bother.
I'm just curious, could a coffee expert, you know, if you put two cups of black coffee in front of them, one from El Salvador and another from Colombia, could anyone in the world discern the difference?
Yeah, okay. 100%. Yeah, and that's...
Can you? Can Willie Adler?
I couldn't fucking tell that shit. No way. I'm not that deep. No, but that's what they do. They call it cupping or something like that, where they take different, you know, and they can fucking... It's like wine. It's like anything else. You can go as deep as you want to with this shit.
Yeah. Can Paul, has Paul got the palate for that? Because I remember when we had him on the podcast a couple months ago when he was, when, you know, people were touring and stuff like that. We ran into him in Orlando. And oddly enough, you started talking about coffee, and then I just revert back to where we had a stint on that episode where we did talk about coffee. But he didn't mention anything about working with you, so I guess that was kind of under wraps at that point.
Or we hadn't even, like I was telling, you know, like I was saying before, that the conditions that we're kind of finding ourselves in kind of lended themselves to us branching out and doing other shit. So at that time, I don't think we had even been discussing doing anything. But so, to answer your question, I think Paul is versed enough at this point that he could, you know, I'm not trying to float his boat, but I think he probably could tell you. Different region coffee just by sipping on that shit.
He's a coffee sommelier or whatever they would call that. I don't know what the proper term is.
Sommelier is a wine term. Maybe it applies to coffee too.
I don't know if that's the proper term, but it's something like that. You know?
Well, next time we have Paul on, maybe we'll have to do that kind of cup challenge and see if what Willie said is accurate. Yeah. You might have to find another partner when he disappoints you with his inability to tell.
I can say I live down the road or downwind from a Maxwell House brewing place, so I definitely smell roasting coffee all the time. I don't drink it myself, but I definitely smell it all the time.
Okay. So what do you drink to wake up?
Loser.
Nothing. I don't drink anything to wake up. I think I'm already amped enough when I get up, I just go. I could only imagine what it would be like if I did drink coffee. It'd be like a cracker or something.
He does crystal meth every morning. It's my guess. So if someone says, hey, Willie, I'm running to Dunkin' Donuts, you want anything? Do you throw up in your mouth or?
No. I just had Dunkin' Donuts coffee this past Sunday while we were running around. No, I've been called a coffee snob, and I think that I kind of put myself in check. On that, a few years ago, you may have caught me fucking saying some bullshit, but I think I put myself in check and was like, you know what, don't be a dick and just fucking drink the goddamn coffee.
All the baristas in Willie's area know him by name by now.
They do. They do.
So, Starbucks versus Dunkin' Donuts, if you had to choose?
I'm going DD all day.
Oh.
Nice.
Hey,
nice.
America runs on Dunkin'.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, a lot more affordable as well. Final coffee question, I guess. How do you take your coffee?
I'm a latte type of dude, so I love espresso. So I could drink espresso straight, but I like a good latte. I like a little milk with my coffee. A lot of fucking coffee purists would probably say that I'm fucking it all up. But you know what? My coffee, don't drink it, you know, whatever. I like a nice latte.
All right. Is there anything, you know, before we move on that you need to communicate in the coffee realm other than go buy his coffee?
Just go buy the shit. Yeah, it's good. It's really good.
It's not made with the kind of bean.
Support your local coffee house. I know we were talking about Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks, but if you have like a local coffee spot in your place, support them as opposed to anybody else. Small business, especially now, needs it more than anything else.
Agreed. None of the beans you guys use pass through any bowels of any animals, correct? Or is that
No, we are not fucking around with that Kopi Luwak, man.
Okay.
Any thoughts on that?
I actually made it a point when we were in Jakarta to go and drink Kopi Luwak. And it was like we had to go through some weird shopping mall and then down some weird stairs. And the guy's like, yeah, come on. And I'm like, really? Like, this is sketchy. So we ended up down in this fucking weird little spot. And I tried it and I was like, okay. You know, maybe my palate isn't as versed enough. But I wasn't as impressed as I thought that I should be.
Not surprising.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I figured. I'll pass on that. But hey, to each his own, I suppose.
That's right.
So you're chilling in Virginia right now. Obviously, the pandemic's got, at least in America, I suppose there's limited performances going on in Europe, elsewhere in the world, but, you know, America's shut down. So you guys put out an album out, which you obviously haven't been able to tour to support. What have you been up to, you know, since the album's released, since you can't play a show, other than, you know, your forthcoming streaming events?
Yeah, no, I mean, those will be really cool. And been rehearsing a fucking shit ton for that. But no, I've been actually just, you know, beyond the coffee thing, I've been writing a lot of music. So I just kind of taken the opportunity to use the time to be as creative as possible. I've been helping my wife a lot with her shop. She owns a sandwich shop here right out by the airport in Richmond. So I've been helping her a lot with that because, you know, being on tour, I can't really – I'm not around. So it's just – yeah, I'm just trying to use the time as wisely as I can and work on a ton of music and do what I can to help her out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was thinking you know, about the financial impact of this. You know, it seems like, so you have smaller bands that have been slumming it for a while. Obviously, they can't tour and they can't earn money from their band. I'm thinking like a, you know, smallish metalcore band that's on a label and sells a few thousand albums. But they were already in crappy financial shape. So, you know, their standard of living probably sucked if they weren't living with their parents or something. But right. You know, when you're talking Lamb of God or an established band that has sold quite a few records and, you know, can tour to thousands of people, you've obviously, you know, you guys have your own standard of living that, you know, all of a sudden these things come to a crashing halt. And I'm not sure how concerning is not the right word, just how much of a shock to the system has this pandemic been from a Lamb of God, you know, standpoint?
It just depends on how much you let it be. You know, it's either you could completely just curl up in a ball and be like, fuck, like, because at the end of the day, we'll probably be the last motherfuckers to get back to work. I mean, we get people together for a living. So, yeah, it's daunting to say the least, but it's all in what you make it. You can either allow yourself to really just kind of wallow in it, or you can try and be creative and be like, okay, well, I'm going to flip the script and see what I can do, you know, see how can we come up with creative ways to continue living and continue paying the bills and continue, you know, doing, keeping the band out there, but keeping the lights on. So it's a tough balance, but it really is all about just kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, kind of keeping blinders on and keeping the fucking eye on the prize and just making sure that you just stay creative and try to come up with other solutions to figure shit out.
That makes sense. you know, we talk to bands, and obviously you could read the same sort of thoughts anywhere that, hey, you know, album sales don't make you a lot of money, you know, due to streaming services, et cetera. So touring and merch is where the money is. Now, you guys have been, you know, around for 2 decades, I guess, and a significant portion of your catalog came out not prior to the internet, but prior to, say, you know, Spotify and Apple Music and some of these streaming services. Have you noticed, you know, say circa 2005 Lamb of God versus 2020 Lamb of God, or even 2017 Lamb of God, have you noticed a difference in record sales income that has been significant?
No.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's never like you kind of, you know, started off that question by saying, you know, record sales, particularly for metal, and honestly, anybody outside of country and hip hop, you're not going to make money off record sales. So any kind of difference in record sales between before the streaming and after the streaming is negligible. And no, I'm not. I can't say that I've seen a difference.
Okay. So even, you know, if Lamb of God has a gold record in 2008 on Epic or Sony, that still doesn't mean shit financially from album sales.
No, it looks good on my wall, and that's about it.
Accolades do account for something, you know?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Your mom, I guess.
Yeah.
But that kind of sucks. How inspiring for all the metalcore bands that just want to sell 50,000 records.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's all about, and I would assume that any dude who is in a metal band knows, it's all about getting out there and playing. Yeah. So at the moment, our hands are tied, but it's like I was saying, you know, we just got to kind of think on our feet and keep us on our toes, and then just kind of try to keep moving forward and try to push what is entertainment. And what we can get away with.
Yeah. If you're selling, makes sense. I think if a metal band selling 50,000 copies, their live shows are doing pretty well too.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I would, you know, 50,000 right now in this day and age with people and the way people are out of work and current situation, I would think that is remarkable. And it's also a testament to entertainment is such a huge part of people's lives and honestly a necessity. And you know, it kind of goes back to like, I can't, somebody else asked me the question, like, what if, you know, this is the new normal, the, you know, and I was like, I refuse to fucking believe that live music is dead. Like that isn't even on my fucking radar, bro. Like that's not
a non-starter.
At some point. Right, that 100%. At some point, we're going to get back to fucking having fun and raging.
Yep, I hope so.
Sooner than later. Yeah. Let's hope so. Well, I guess that the lack of, you know, income from record sales, it's kind of interesting. I spend a lot of time on Wikipedia, like doing bullshit, like looking at songwriting credits, all kinds of things. Okay. And, you know, some bands delineate songwriters. It seemed like all your albums, like, it's just every song is credited to the entire band. And I realized from a financial standpoint, you know, that probably wouldn't mean much of a difference, you know, as far as you get songwriting credit on one song versus someone else. Obviously, for the Beatles, we're talking that's millions of dollars. For Lamb of God, it's probably negligible. But was that ever a discussion? You know, are we going to highlight the person who wrote this song, or obviously if it's a collaborative effort, those people, or is it just like this, everybody gets a credit. This is a, you know, a team kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it from day one, we wanted it to be, you know, I mean, we wanted it to be that this song is by Lamb of God, that it's not, it's much bigger than one person. We all got into this. We knew what we were getting into. It's like, we all got into this to fucking, to be Lamb of God, and it's a Lamb of God song. It's not a fucking, it's not my song. It's not somebody else's song. It's all of ours. And it, you know, while morale is kept at a high doing that. It's bigger than one dude, and it's all about just us doing it for the love of doing it. You know, none of us, well, speak for myself. I mean, I'm not into it just to fucking claim credit for something that, you know, I did as a part of this band. This is the band stuff. It's all about the band and not about one dude.
Well, you're a better man than I. If I wrote Laid to Rest, I'd be like, why the fuck is the drummer and bassist getting a fifth of this shit? But like I said, you know, I'm selfish in that way.
Fair enough.
So we already mentioned this, but you guys have some, you know, big streaming performances coming up. Was that something you guys always intended to do? Or it sort of said, hey, other people are doing it. We're Lamb of God. We should be out there doing it. Or does the label come in and say, hey, you guys really need to, you know, try and do something here?
No, it's kind of a mix on the middle. Given our current circumstances, it seems like that is one thing that bands in our genre and bands across the board can do in order to stay in touch and do something cool for the fans. And particularly again, man, since, you know, releasing this record, we're not able to support it, not able to promote it. It was just like, well, what can we do? You know, what can we do to get it out there and to keep us, you know, basically in the fans' eyes? And what can we do to help the fans to connect with us? And yeah, we saw other bands doing it. So we were like, well, you know, let's do it. Let's see if we, you know, what a Lamb of God stream is going to be like.
Yeah.
Well, we can do it and let's make it as cool as possible. And let's pick some stuff that, you know, we haven't done before and stuff that obviously if you go online, you're not going to, you know, if you're looking for anything Lamb of God, you're not going to miss that everybody's fucking favorite album is Ashes. So that's the one that, we chose to do along with the self-titled.
Yeah. Well, that's my favorite album. I don't want to be, you know, just another one of those people, but yeah. I gotta be honest. What about you? You know, if let's say, you know, if Tom Hanks came up to you and said, hey, I heard you're in this band, I'm going to listen to one of your albums, what would you say? You know, which album should he listen to? Or maybe that's not the same as your favorite album. I guess that could be two different questions. Let's take them one at a time. You know, what would you recommend someone if you wanted to impress them or really hook them on Lamb of God?
You know, it's hard to deny the fans with Ash. And I went, and it's funny because I'm going back and rehearsing all this shit now, and I'm playing songs that honestly I hadn't even listened to in 16 years. And it's a fucking good record. It's a really good record. And at the time we were basically kids. And it's interesting to play it as the player as I am today. And as the songwriter as I am today, to be like, what was I thinking writing this fucking song? It's like nothing repeats. It's just riff after riff. And then I talk to somebody, they're like, yeah, that's the fucking cool part about it. It's fucking cool riff after cool riff after cool riff. And I'm like, you know what? There is something very special about that. And as a snapshot in time in Lamb of God's career, that album is very, very special. Where we were as dudes, where we were as people, and as a band collectively, where we were. I would say if I was telling Tom Hanks to go listen to a record, I would tell him to go listen.
Yeah. Well, Tom Hanks, to be fair, I guess he's probably not the right celebrity to mention. His head might explode, but no, that makes sense. I mean, it's such a great freaking record. I still listen to, you know, certain tracks on there, like, all the time. Hell, I listened to Blood of the Scribe yesterday, and that one section towards the end, I want to punch holes in my wall every freaking time, you know, years later. So kudos to you as a fan. That album is, yeah, I understand why everybody sort of points to that one. I guess You know, if you were forced to choose a favorite at this point, would maybe you just can't answer that. It's not really a fair question to the guitarist, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's weird, dude. It's like, because every album, and I say this about every new album that we roll, like, if we have a new album, that's my favorite album. That's the one that I'm rolling, because I have such the connection to it is so much closer. Just purely because of the time involved. So, to me, dude, I love our latest record. To me, it kind of embodies everything that we do. But at the same time, going back and rehearsing these songs from Ashes, and just basically that time period of the band, it was special, because I'm not going to say that I didn't know how to write a song then, but structurally, there is no structure to a lot of those fucking songs. So it's just like, that in and of itself, I've come to realize how special it really is. And just rehearsing all this stuff, I'm like, this is, you know, it was a really, really cool time, and I'm glad to have been involved with it.
Well, maybe that's the formula for your next fan favorite. Just don't write songs. Just throw out a bunch of fucking riffs.
Fucking slam them all together and be like, that's cool.
Yeah, because it worked. I guess if it's an awesome riff, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right about that. Yeah, if it's awesome riff after awesome riff, I mean, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, that's a winning formula no matter how you slice it. Well, so you're 3 months out from the new, roughly 3 months out from the new record, and you just said you know, you still love it. So I was going to ask you how you know, with a little hindsight, how you assess the album, but sounds like you're completely, good with it.
Yeah, no, I'm good with it. I'm good. I am 100% good with it. I think that, I'm happy with the process. I'm happy with how it came about and how we wrote it. In fact, I believe the process of writing that record will continue on through the next, and so on. So I think the way that we chose to write it in increments, you know, and then take breaks and walk away for a bit and then come back and listen, I think was super smart. And, it allowed us time to kind of see, you know, where our heads were at. So yeah, I'm still super stoked on that record, and I think the precedent it set as far as writing goes will carry us forward.
Right. Do you still feel the same way about, you know, New American Gospel? Because every time I listen to it, with all due respect to Steve Austin, I don't know what the fuck was going on from a production standpoint.
And no,
maybe that's part of the appeal.
That was a crazy time. And I, you know, we're coming up on the 20-year anniversary of Gospel. So it's like, or it just passed, whatever it was. That, dude, I wouldn't change that record for the fucking world, man. And it was because it was so gritty and dirty, and being in Steve Austin's little studio and that Studer fucking 2-inch tape machine and him slicing that shit with a razor blade and then taping it back together. And those were our edits. And it was like, like, you're taking the tape of this fucking take that I thought was great, and it's got the hole, and he's just fucking slicing it. I'm like, this is fucking crazy.
That's voodoo.
The whole punk rock vibe of that whole record, I love. I look back on that time with such affinity, and I'm just like, God, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I, you know, it's got a special place in my heart, even though part of me, you know, wishes I could hear a version of it recorded differently to see how that would stack up.
Sure. No, the way it translated to actually record, pretty shot, but you know,
it's amazing that record had, with that product, that gritty ass, you know, basement production, had the mass appeal it did. So I guess that speaks to the songs, you know, if nothing else. I got to give Steve Austin credit, because that was like going to be my career, an audio engineer. And I came in at a time, because I'm, you know, older now, where they were still using 2-inch tapes and razor blades. And there is nothing more nerve-wracking than slicing fucking tape and putting it back together, knowing there's no going back.
There's no going back. Like, once you slice, dude, that's it. Like, you're fucking, yeah.
All these Pro Tool motherfuckers don't appreciate that.
Nobody gets it, dude. Nobody gets it.
Yeah. I gotta ask, how's your brother doing?
You know, I you would have to ask him.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so that
follow-up questions?
Well,
yeah, I don't think there's any follow-up questions for that. I mean,
I mean, I guess I sensed or at the time that happened, you know, an interview came out or you made a statement, something to the effect that it was awkward, but, you know, it wasn't bad vibes. Unfortunately, it sounds like there hasn't been a lot of progress in that regard.
Well, I would like to think that he's doing well, and I really want him to be doing well. They're just really, for lack of a, you know, I just haven't talked to him. So I really want him to be doing well. Yeah,
that's fair. How messed up is it, or how weird is it to have been in a band with your brother, no less, for so long? And then, I mean, everything's great from the surface with Art, and obviously he can, you know, he kills it on drums. I'm just wondering, from you emotionally, that's got to be, you know, he was in the band before you, and I assume he brought you in. How weird is that emotionally?
I mean, he's my brother, you know, right. So it's like, we have shit that nobody else has. So it's, and that will always, you know, that till the day we both die. I mean, that's, you know, that we'll always have that bond. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of goes back to what we were talking about with the songwriting credits. I mean, Lamb of God is bigger than any one dude, and to do what's best for Lamb of God and where we are now, I think we did what's best for Lamb of God and where the band is currently.
Yeah. All right. I can appreciate that.
I have a question regarding this kind of topic, since the latest album, Lamb of God, the self-titled one, that's your first release without Chris. Was there any difference in writing and, you know, with a new drummer in the midst of the group and stuff like that? Like, what was different about writing this record compared to the previous records you guys had?
I mean, Art and Chris are vastly different drummers, and they have a vastly different approach when it comes to writing and being creative. So, yeah, 100% different. It's, you know, two different human beings two different artists that, you know, approach things differently. The biggest thing for us and Art was to convince Art to trust himself, to not, you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like, yeah. I think Art knew that he had some pretty big fucking shoes to fill when he came into the band. And I think that he really kind of wanted to make sure, that we were stoked on what he was doing. And I think one of the biggest things that I wanted Art to realize was there's a reason why you're here, bro. Like, you know, trust in yourself, trust in your creative process. And I want to see what you add to this. I want to see what you bring to the table. And he didn't disappoint, man. And it was, to answer your question, very different, but absolutely incredible working with Art.
Cool. Yeah, it's definitely a, like you said, big shoes to fill. And it definitely could be probably daunting for an outsider to come into a band that's been, you know, well-established in, like you said, two decades almost. That's got to be kind of a mindfuck on his side.
We're fucking weirdos, for sure.
Did you guys, you know, I always remember the Metallica documentaries. Jason Newsted talked about how, you know, when he came in for Cliff Burton, they hazed the fuck out of him. Did you guys harass Art at all?
I think there was probably a fair share of, you know, little things being, little pranks being played on Mr. Art. You know, I can't remember what it was. If I do, I'll let you know at a later date. I think there was some shit that were like, yep, you got to do this. Like, and it was like, see if he does it. But all in good fun, all in good fun. We knew that Art, you know, we had known Art for a long time. Art had been a friend of the band for a long time, and Art had been on tour with us, and Art had shared a bus with us for weeks at a time. So, Art kind of knew how we operated.
Yeah, that's good. Is it weird? I guess he's like maybe 15 years younger than some of you guys.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Does that even?
It's got to be intimidating.
Make it
for
weird.
Him.
I don't know. I guess not. I mean, if someone's under 21, that would be a big difference. But you know, 32 versus 45. I don't know.
Right. See, that's the thing. It's just like, you know, I'll be 45 soon. I think Art's like 32, 31.
Yeah, he's
something like that. Like you said, if it were like 21 or like some dude that this was his first band and he was fucking 18, yeah, there'd be a whole lot of whoa, bro. But no, I think we're all at a good place. And no, there really hasn't been any kind of weird, you know, age adjustment type of deal.
I think you guys did the smart thing, you know, in hiring a younger guy, because that's the most physically demanding thing. So, you know, you guys could be in your 80s and he'll still be like, you know, a fresh 70 to bash those drums.
No, you're right. And, you know, honestly, there's a breath of fresh energy that Art has brought in that has been greatly appreciated.
Yeah. So, you got the streaming events. I guess at this point, it's impossible to plan anything. So it's just like you guys got to wait with everybody else to see what the hell shakes out, I assume.
Yeah, pretty much, man. I mean, we're going to, beyond the two streams that we'll do, we're, you know, just kind of, like I was saying, I mean, I'm writing music and, you know, we'll see what ideas kind of come down the pipe and see where we can go from here and, you know, what kind of avenues open up to opportunities and shit that we can do.
Might there be a sooner release than expected because of all this downtime and all this writing going on? Or do you guys plan to stay on some kind of schedule for your releases?
You know, I wouldn't jump ahead of a release while we still have yet to even support this album, which I think is amazing. So I think we're just kind of taking advantage of the time we have and using it as wisely as we can. And, you know, being ahead of the game isn't the worst thing in the world. So
true. There you go, folks. You heard it here first. New Lamb of God album in December. did I get that wrong? I'm just curious, have there been any people in the industry, your tour people, is anybody trying to push American bands to try, you know, shows in Europe at this point?
I have not heard anything about that, no.
Okay. Just curious. I don't really know what the situation is over there, but I do see, you know, touring or shows going on. So I don't know if some people are so desperate to have their bands play shows that they're like, hey, you know, could you play 3 dates in Spain? But
yeah,
sounds,
I mean,
like nothing's happening.
Yeah, I don't know. That sounds far more expensive than what it would be.
Have you guys gotten offers, or do those, you know, come down to the pipeline and for you, or do you have like a booking agent that just is not accepting offers right now? So no, even if you did get an offer, it wouldn't trickle down to you guys.
No, we get offers all the time. And if they make sense, they make sense. But if they make sense, you'll see us do them.
Yeah,
I mean that's kind of.
So when Guar asked you to play at the drive-in show they're doing, that just didn't make sense. I'm kidding, of course. But they did just announce that, and I guess that's not going to be too far from you.
No, it's not. I had no idea they were doing something.
How do you feel about the drive-in shows? Because they're not the only ones doing them. I mean, That seems to be something that a lot of artists, even outside the metal world, are doing. So, how do you feel about taking the car to a drive-in show?
How far can you launch fake semen? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the car washes are going to be busy after that one. I don't know. I mean, honestly, you know, more power to him. And I'm not opposed to going to a drive-in show or doing one. So if the opportunity arises and it makes sense for the whole band, then absolutely. You know, like I said, man, it's probably going to take baby steps to bring this whole industry back to where it was. So if that being one of them, then fucking I'm all for it.
Yep. Well, hopefully we don't have to, I mean, not to put down the Guar thing, but hopefully we won't have to suffer through, you know, months and months of drive-in shows. Cause that might work for Guar because they're so, you know, theatrical. It just, it doesn't seem like it would translate for most bands.
Heck, they may start doing that going forward.
Well, yeah. And to make it really spicy, you could show up in a convertible and see what the fuck happens.
They got to have a bunch of hoses running out to the cars with all sorts of fluids and stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Well, I want to be respectful of your time here. I didn't have anything pressing to ask. And since you've got no touring going on, you're probably going to have to do a bunch more interviews. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to punish you too much. So,
I really appreciate you guys taking the time and having me on, man. And again, I'm sorry. I know it was supposed to be last week and then it was supposed to be Tuesday and shit for me just got out of hand. So actually, I really appreciate you guys with me and having the patience.
We don't care because you're in Lamb of God. And me personally, because, you know, I'm the boss over here.
Yeah.
No offense to Dave, but, you know.
Well, I also had like a.
This was one.
I had tree services on both sides of my house for the last 2 days, so Tuesday wouldn't have worked anyway. And, you know, I had a bunch of stump grinders going on and all sorts of stuff. But before we cut you loose, I do know someone wanted me to ask.
Well, I just want to say, Dave. I just wanted to say, you know, since I've been running Lamb Goat for 20 years, or whatever, I leave my house shows. The only show in the last, I used to when I was young, but now that I'm older, I'm like, screw that. I'd rather sit at home and watch Forensic Files for 4 hours or something. The only show I've been to in the last 5 years was Lamb of God in Reading, PA. So if nothing else, that says something.
That's awesome, man.
And I got two things. One, I think the weirdest place I've ever seen you guys play would be Bonnaroo a few years ago, and I randomly came across those videos on my GoPro videos. But it's always cool to see those types of bands break into that kind of festival environment, let alone – I mean, there are mainstream metal festivals around the world and starting to happen in this country as well. But at the time, I mean, Bonnaroo is, you know – it was a jam band situation, and then it came into what it is now. But to see you guys there was very, very strange, but in a good way. You know, like I know that if you remember correctly, I think it shut down. Bonnaroo shut down from a rainstorm or something like that, and then you guys came on. So luckily, I was able to get like very close because you know they weren't letting that many people in. But that was cool to see you guys there. I've also seen Between the Buried and Me there, and Animals as Leaders, so that was a cool little vibe.
Trust me, it was just as weird for us, and the whole power situation going down and then us going on, it was all around bizarre, but it ended well. And the crazy thing was is that it was the last night of that tour. It was the last night of the tour with Clutch, and I think we were all just shot, and then to wake up on that last day in the Bonnaroo parking lot, like outside a hotel, and it was weird. So, I'm glad. I'm really glad it happened. I'm glad we played it. I'm glad it's over too.
Yeah, I don't know how many fans you may have won over, really, at that crowd, but it was definitely a highlight for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if the. Yeah, it was a wild show.
Yeah, I think Slayer played it one year too. So you're not like, I mean, they definitely. definitely, you know, supplemented the metal in there sometimes. Someone wanted me to ask you, I guess this could be the final question unless Alex has anything else, but is the fight in the Killadelphia DVD real?
What? Really? I think that that's been covered over and over and over again. And I think Randy and Mark have extensively talked about that. So, you know,
he's not coming out and admitting his fate.
I referred to earlier interviews with Randy and Mark.
Will do. All right.
Yeah, he can put a link right in the video. I did have one final quick question for you, Willie, since you're such a riff master. Obviously, you've proven your worth there. Is there any music you want to recommend? What have you been listening to?
Oh, God, what have I been listening to? There was something, man. The fuck was it? It's funny because I don't really listen to a ton of music, but there is this one fucking band that I was listening to, and I feel like a fucking idiot because I don't really listen to a ton of music. I listen, you know, I play a lot, I write a lot, and I do a lot of my own thing and all that shit. God damn, who the fuck was it?
Imagine Dragons?
No, Dragons. Definitely not Imagine Dragons. If I remember, man, I will. I'll text you.
Yeah,
there is one band I'm going to right now.
Yeah, I want to give them the Willie Adler shout out, but
they
made such an impression on you, you can't even remember their name.
Such an asshole.
I'm just fucking with you. No, but that's it then. We'll let you go. Go help your wife with the sandwiches, and we super appreciate your time, man.
Very much.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you guys. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks.
All right.
Take it easy, Willie.
I'll see you, man. Later.
Late.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King in Off-Road Minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.